Planetary Makeover presents a double feature with host Dick Larson and guest McNair Ezzard, titled No Fear of Death, plus part two, Death and Rebirth. Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Dick Larson, and welcome to the show. My guest today, my special guest, is Reverend McNair Ezzard. Reverend Ezzard is an ordained Methodist minister. He is also a healthcare administrator and a longtime student of the Ageless Wisdom teachings. And it's wonderful to have you here, McNair. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dick.
For starters, would you share a little bit about your background and about how you came to be interested in death and dying?
It's interesting because it seems like it's been a lifelong interest. Even when I was a child, I used to read about ghosts and hauntings and things like that. I think that was probably my first indication that I had an interest, and
sure.
Went off to college and I majored in film and television. I did a couple of films on death and dying. Went to seminary, did my thesis on hospice and death and dying, and got involved in hospice after that. It's maybe there's some unresolved issues around the prospect of death that I want to deal with, and this is my way. I don't know, but it's certainly the ultimate question for all of us about what happens when we die and how our lives are shaped based on our fear or not fear of death.
What is your experience of how our society views death?
Well, unfortunately, I think we're a death-denying society.
Death-denying?
Death-denying. We've had a lot of advances over the last 30 years in how we care for the dying through such programs as hospice, where people are enabled to die free of machinery and no pain. But basically, we still deny that death exists. We can see it in the way that we keep people alive in nursing homes, where quantity is much more important than quality.
And quality of life.
And in hospitals, where we keep people attached to machines, where if we would unattach those machines, the people would die and mm-hmm. move on. We see it in our advertisements on television, the shows that people watch, which emphasize youth. Very seldom do we see senior citizens advertising products on television. It's all geared to youth and being alive and those sorts of things. We don't really take the time to think about death and what it means for our lives. So yeah, I would say we're definitely a death-denying society.
Do you get the impression that most people think death is a bad thing then?
If you're lying in pain and you've been suffering with cancer for months, mm-hmm. even maybe a year or so, then death may not look like such a bad thing.
Right.
But if you're young, 30s, 40s, 20s, 50s, and you feel like you've got your whole life ahead of you, death could be seen as bad. It just depends on the person, whether we would view it as good or bad. And every culture is different, too. Different religions view death differently. So it's just a matter of the society and the people that make up that society.
So death isn't necessarily viewed as bad, then?
Not necessarily.
Do you think it's feared?
I think it's feared. I think there's not only the fear of death, but there's also the fear of dying. You and I talked earlier before the show about we weren't necessarily afraid of death, but we're afraid of the process of dying, that we
yes.
didn't want to be in pain, that we didn't want to die too young. That kind of issue is totally different than the fear of death itself. With the fear of death, we fear loss of our identity. We fear judgment, say if we're deeply steeped in the Christian traditional teaching of heaven and hell, we fear judgment and that we're going to go to hell if we didn't live a good life.
Right.
Those sorts of things. Fear loss of our family and friends, loss of our identity. All these things are tied up with the fear of death.
So there's a lot of fear around death.
There can be, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of it
yeah.
covered up that we're not even in touch with.
Well, How did we get there? How did we get to the point where society is so preoccupied with the fear of death?
I don't know that they're so preoccupied with it, but we're so focused on this identity as this body or this job or this house or this relationship. We identify with the things of this world,
mm-hmm.
and we think that that's who we are. And that all this whole idea, and so we don't really even think about death, or but when we're confronted with it, we could see very easily that we have a fear of death. When we lose a friend, or
right.
we see a big calamity happen in the world and it hits home with us, we could come face to face with our fear if we're open to it. But it's really basically through our conditioning. It may be societal conditioning, but more importantly, I think it's through religious conditioning. That the church, especially in the West, the Christian church, has not taught us the truth about who we are. You know, we are all familiar with that teaching that we're sinners from the word go, that we're sinners,
worms
in the dust, you know, and that we have no chance of ever getting out of that.
Right.
That's just the status of things. But we're not. We're much more than that. And according to the Ageless Wisdom teachings, which I've studied for a number of years, we are really spiritual beings, divine beings, children of God, if you will, that are here for a purpose and are on a long journey. So it's basically the conditioning, the teachings that we've been confronted with from our youth until now and throughout the last 2,000 years has gotten us into this predicament of not really knowing what happens after death and not knowing who we are.
Growing up in the Christian tradition myself, one of the things that I thought a lot about as a young person was the fear of death, because I hadn't lived as well as I could, as rightly as I could, and I was afraid to go to hell. Mm-hmm. Is there a hell?
I don't think so. Not in the traditional way that we have of understanding hell. Hell is not a place under the earth where there's a devil and he stands there
and there's fire
and you spend the rest of your time there after you die. So no, there's not a hell. Hell, you can have hell on earth. There's many people who experience hell right here on earth. And depending on our desires and our state of consciousness, that creates our own life. We each create our own life situation. And the strength of our desires and where those desires are focused can create a hell for us. And when we die and we go to a different level of consciousness or awareness on the other planes of existence, those desires and those things that we used to dwell on and focus on when we were in the body, they don't suddenly disappear. They go with us. So we can take the hell that we might create for ourselves here, we experience it on the other side when we leave the body. So there is a hell, but it's of our own making, and it's of our own state of awareness.
Okay, so somebody who in their lifetime is has low self-esteem and doesn't think much of themselves and is very critical of others and is pretty much a miserable, lonely person, are you saying that when they die, their hell is going to be that they're going to continue in that state of consciousness, that state of mind, that kind of thing?
In a sense, yeah. Until we learn the truth about who we are, and until we manifest that truth in our day-to-day existence, till we learn that we're children of God and that we're here for a purpose and that love is what we're supposed to be learning and manifesting in our relationships, we die, but we come back again. So we'll learn the next time if we don't learn this time.
So the concept of rebirth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That eventually we'll get it right and we'll manifest.
Okay, divinity. If there's no hell, technically speaking, then what about heaven? Is there no heaven?
Heaven is a state of awareness as well. And actually, there's two ways to look at heaven. There's heaven in the sense that it's a state of consciousness. We can experience heaven on earth if we have enough love in our hearts and we manifest enough love in our relationships. We could experience heaven right here in this time, in this body, as a person. If humanity as a whole was manifesting enough love and we experienced a civilization of peace and harmlessness and well-being, we could experience that sort of heaven right here on earth. But heaven is not a place where you go when you die and you knock on the pearly gates, and if you're lucky, St. Peter will turn the key and let you in, and if not, you go to the other place. That's not what heaven is about. But there's also a sense that heaven, in the Bible, it's called the kingdom of God, and the kingdom of God is where we're all headed eventually through the reincarnational process as we become perfect by coming back over and over and over again
and learning the lessons. Okay.
We eventually enter that state where all those who have become perfect now live. the Masters of Wisdom, the Great White Brotherhood, the disciples of the Christ Himself. All these individuals who have gone ahead of us live in that state of brotherhood and that state of unity and love, which is also known as the Kingdom of God, which is where we're headed eventually.
So do we go there and hang out, or is there work to do there?
There's lots of work to do. When you get into heaven, actually, you've got a lot more work to do than you do now when you don't experience it.
So you don't float on a cloud and play a harp.
You don't float on a cloud. The idea, we come into, our souls come into incarnation, come into these bodies because it has a purpose. And that purpose is to serve the plan of God. As we evolve, we become more aware of what that plan is. We become more aware of our part in that plan.
Yes.
So as we become perfect and learn everything that Schoolhouse Earth has to teach us,
right,
we want to participate in that plan more, and we can take on more of that plan to ourselves and manifest our part in helping that plan to become a reality on the earth. So we come back even after we're perfect.
So when we're done with the physical body and we become permanent spirit beings, then there's work to do in the spiritual world as well.
There's work to be done in the spiritual realm, but there's also, we come back in another body, but we don't have to resolve all the bad things we've created for ourselves. We've already done all that work and resolved our bad karma. So now we're just here to help humanity to put a hand down and lift our brothers and sisters up towards the light. So we come back or we don't come back. It just depends on what our individual destiny might be.
Okay, you said we resolve our individual karma. Mm-hmm. Is that salvation? Where does salvation fit into this?
It is salvation. Salvation is a path that we step on. As we step on the spiritual way, the spiritual existence, and start to meditate, start to study, start to serve other people, the way of salvation opens before us, and we move closer to our destiny, which is union with God towards a certain level of consciousness and awareness. So that is our salvation. Now, karma, as we come back into incarnation, like if I do something bad to you today, I have to pay for that. If I do something good to you today, I will reap the benefits of that.
Law of cause and effect.
Exactly. It says it in the Bible. Jesus says it in the Bible. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
As you sow, so shall you
reap. Now, I might not reap the benefits or the bad karma next life, but I might reap the benefits or the bad karma three lives from now.
Okay.
And the purpose of that is so that we eventually learn to live in harmlessness with each other. And the law of karma teaches us that eventually when you hit your head against the wall enough, you know not to hit your head against the wall anymore, and you learn and you grow and you move on and you learn new lessons.
So nobody saves you, talking about salvation, except you.
Exactly. It's all up to us. We can do it quickly or slowly. We have free will, but it's all up to us. Eventually, we're all going to the same place. Some of us will do it slower. People like the Christ have done it a lot quicker. People like the Buddha have done it a lot quicker than us.
Right.
So yeah, eventually we go, but we have free will to make it a slow process or a quick process.
To get back just for a minute to the fear of death, which is where we started this conversation, how would you suggest that people deal with the fear of death?
The best way to deal with it is not to wait till you're on your deathbed, not to wait until you're 90 years old and you haven't given it a thought your whole life, but to turn towards it in your life in a manner of speaking. Face it, think about it, don't be afraid of it, but just, if you know, get in touch with it within oneself about what death means. Learn who you are as a child of God. Start to read the great spiritual teachers, meditate, whatever it might take that you can get in touch with that inner divinity within yourself. Find out who you are and look at what other philosophers and teachers have said about death. Read on these things and you become more familiar with it, and the familiar doesn't hold the same sense of fear and trepidation because it's become more of a friend than an enemy to you.
So it sounds like you're saying get to know yourself, find some kind of inward path, whether it's some kind of spiritual path or whatever it is, to get to know yourself, who you really are, that you're a spirit, not just a physical body.
When you know who you are, you know that this world is transient. You know that your relationships are not permanent. You know that you're not your job or your house or mm-hmm. your car. All these things pass away. And you focus on what is permanent, which is that soul of yourself, that inner spark of God. That's what's permanent. And when you get in touch with that, the world can come and go, or people can come and go. I mean, you may miss them because we're all human, but you know that nothing in this world lasts, and that the real part of us, whether we're in the body or out of the body, the real part of us lives on. So that's the number one call.
Is get to know yourself, who you really are.
Who you really are as a spirit, as a soul. Yes.
Right. Then the other thing you said is get educated about what people have said about death, what knowledgeable people have written. I would assume that might include even reading books by people like Dr. Raymond Moody, who's talked about near-death experiences and talked to people who've actually died.
People who've had those near-death experiences have come back. There's lots of more and more books out all the time now of research into this whole prospect of reincarnation and that sort of thing. All these things, I mean, there's a fellow professor at University of Virginia, Ian Stevenson, who's been doing research for years about where he goes to these countries, say India or Lebanon, and he interviews children who remember all these details about a previous existence, and he can verify that because the people of that previous existence for that child are still there, and they can name their parents, they can name where they live, their brothers or sisters, all these sorts of things are that he has researched that these children talk about. So there's things like that that are going on in other scientific studies which are proving more and more that there's more to life than just this physical world that we see, that there is a consciousness within us that has a life outside of this body. And these sorts of things can help us get more familiar with the prospect of death and thereby lessen our fear of death.
Very good. I also want to talk just for a moment about people who have suffered the loss of a loved one. They're going through grief and loss, the tragic, tragic losses sometimes. And I'm wondering what suggestion you might have for people about how to handle their grief, how to move through their grief, how to deal with that tremendous, tremendous grief and suffering of the loss of a loved one.
Grief is very hard for people.
Yes.
We all have to go through it. If we don't die when we're young, then eventually our parents, our friends, old people older than us and younger than us are all going to die. I mean, we're going to be in that role sometime, but grief affects us on such a deep level that it can never, it's always there, even after time has passed, a year or two after we've lost a loved one, for instance, will never go away. That gap will always be there. That hole that we might feel within our lives will always be there. But we have to understand that it's part of the normal process to grieve. It's normal to cry. It's normal to want to talk about it all the time with our friends. We have to understand that people we know that are grieving need to be able to talk. They need permission to know it's okay to cry. People don't get over grief in a week. You know, in our society, we say, well, take a week off, you know, come back to work in a week, and people expect you to be over it, but you're not. You still carry this with you.
Yeah.
People can get very depressed about it. I would say if you're grieving, to make sure you have a support network somehow, a friend or two friends or other family members or whatever it might be. Find a support group through something like a hospice or social service agency or through your church. Mm-hmm. People that are going through grief share with one another so that you know you're not alone in that experience. Mm-hmm. And just give yourself time. You can read books about what you're going through. There's common threads in grief, common things that people experience. No matter what kind of grief it is, they all have certain characteristics that we're all going to undergo. Yeah. And reading about them, hearing other people talk about them, will let us know that we're not crazy, you know, and that it's normal what we're experiencing.
Does writing help? Sometimes writing a goodbye letter or letter of regrets and thank yous.
Those things are helpful.
Like that.
You know, it goes along that same line as journaling, doing a daily journal
and
something like that. Whatever it might be that a person gravitates to, that's what they should do. The thing not to do is to drink, do drugs, to run away from your grief.
To
alter your consciousness. The thing to do is to turn and face it, be with it, not dwell on it, but if the waves of grief come over you, just sit back, sit quietly, and just watch it happening in your life, you know, but don't turn away from it. Don't run away from it, because it'll come up in other ways further down the line, you know, either physical symptoms or in your relationships. The thing to do is to let it out.
People don't want to experience it. They want to avoid the painful feelings, but it's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that experiencing it is the way to process through it and to finally come out the other end of it.
It is. And people want to avoid people that are grieving. Yeah. But to grieve and to go through it can also have an effect, as we were talking earlier, about on our own fear of death. You know, we can see all this process of life, of death, of grief as a normal thing. It's what it means to be human in this body, and we all have to go through it. And if reincarnation is to be believed, we've all gone through it thousands of times. We don't remember it, but we have.
McNair, let's talk about the future. Let's talk about the future. How do you see... Do you see our view of death changing in the future? Our fear of death going away
definitely.
More?
Definitely. People wouldn't believe what's going to happen over the next 50 to 100 years and how our whole view of death and dying is going to change. In the world right now are a great group, if you will, of spiritual teachers called the Masters of Wisdom. These are spiritual teachers who are coming into our world for the first time to live openly since time immemorial, if you will. And at their head is one who's called Maitreya, the world teacher. And this group of teachers, spiritual teachers, will be living with humanity once they come out into the public arena. They will be living among humanity, teaching, guiding, and showing us how to manifest who we are as spiritual beings, teaching us who we are in the first place and showing us how to demonstrate that in our daily lives. And one of the things they will be showing us is that death is not real. Death is only an illusion that happens to this body. But when you know who you are and when you experience who you are, you know that death is only a doorway through which you're walking. And this will be demonstrated for us. And it will take away from humanity that age-old fear of death that we've had for so long. And that it will free us up to live life more abundantly.
My first thought is, will I live long enough to see, to hear this teaching and to feel this sense of relief?
Well,
where are these teachers and when do they start teaching?
Unless you're going out tonight, I think you probably will be. You look pretty strong and healthy and youthful. It's going to happen very soon. We're told by British author Benjamin Krim, who's the chief exponent of this story and has been for 20 years, that soon to emerge into the public arena will be the world teacher Maitreya and his group, the Masters. Prior to their coming out before the world, there will be certain changes in the world, one of which will be a major economic collapse, if you will, change, so that the priorities of the world change. And instead of doing the things that we're doing now, spending all our money on armaments and guns and whatever it might be now, that our priorities will change. But for those priorities to change so that we're building houses for people and feeding people and giving people health care and education and clothing, so that those become our concerns, the whole economic system has to change.
Yeah, because money is God right now.
Money is our God, exactly. Right. And there's nothing wrong with money in and of itself, but it's the use of it.
Money can be a great spiritual tool, actually.
It can accomplish great things.
Yes.
But our whole focus on the material way of living has to change.
Right.
And an economic collapse is seen by the Masters, by this group of spiritual teachers, as really the only way to get us over that step so that we start to live life differently.
So they're here now.
They're here now. The economic collapse will happen, and then the world teacher will be invited to speak to the whole world through the link television and radios.
By the media?
By the media. There will be such a call from humanity that we need help that he will be invited to come forward. He's living in the world now and has been for since 1977, ready to help humanity, ready to come forward at any moment, but hasn't because we haven't been ready for him. But very soon we're going to be ready because this change in our economy and our political
systems. So he's waiting for the timing to be right to have the greatest impact is what
exactly,
it sounds like.
Exactly, exactly.
So he's going to come forward and, speak to everybody?
He will speak on that day, which will come to be known as the Day of Declaration. He will appear on television. people that have been, you know, alerted to this fact will turn on their TV and they'll see him on television. He will appear on television for 20 or 30 minutes. But the interesting thing about it is he won't speak, but yet we'll still hear him talking in our own minds, telepathically, so that his words will be dropping silently into our minds. It'll be like he's having a conversation with us. Mm-hmm. You'll hear him in English. I'll hear him in English. People in Holland will hear him in Dutch, and France will hear him in French, and so on around the world, okay, in their own language. He will be telling us at that time who he is, why he's here, who we are, and that what our purpose is and what's going to happen with his presence in the world and the presence in the world of the Masters. On that day, also at that time, his love will flow out all over all the earth through the hearts of all humanity. It will be as if he is embracing us in his arms, his love. On the day of Pentecost in the Bible,
right,
people felt that tremendous uplift of God's love and
yes,
spoke in tongues. Well, this will be a reenactment only on a world scale of the happenings of Pentecost. And the third thing that'll happen on that day, in addition to the us hearing his voice and his love flowing through our hearts, mm-hmm, is there'll be hundreds of thousands of simultaneous physical healings of people who are ill, as if so that those together, those three things will convince humanity that, hey, this is a pretty special fellow. We better listen to what he's saying. He's here to help. Let's let him talk some more,
yeah,
so we can move on, yeah, and have a better world.
I like the idea of the love in the heart. I like that a lot, that we will feel the love of God in our heart, because people are worried about the Antichrist, and the Antichrist can't do that.
No.
So that would tell me that this is the real teacher.
Well, the love is already in us, Dick. The love is already there. It's like he's opening the door,
okay,
and letting it out.
So
I mean, his love connects with the love which is already within us.
I would think that that after that, our view of death would change significantly, you know?
It will.
Yeah.
When we know who we are, there's no reason to fear, because we know that we're immortal and that life goes on.
Thank you. Reverend McNair Ezard, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed this conversation.
And here's the second half of our double feature entitled Death and Rebirth with host Dick Larson and guest McNair Ezard.
Hi, I'm Dick Larson, and welcome to the show. My guest today is Reverend McNair Ezard. Reverend Ezard is an ordained Methodist minister, and he's also the administrator of a nursing home facility, as well as a longtime student of the Ageless Wisdom. So welcome to the show, McNair.
Thanks, Dick. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you here. McNair, many of us got our ideas about what happens to us when we die and after we die, growing up in an organized religion, such as I'm sure you did and I did as well. And so we've developed our belief system about what happens after death, largely based on that, at least going into adulthood. What do you think happens to us when we die?
I think it's a lot different than what we've been led to believe and what we've been taught within the confines of the church. To me, we are souls in incarnation, and that we're on a journey from a low level of consciousness, if you will, to experiencing a much higher level of consciousness, or what some people would call experience of God. And it takes a long time to make that journey. But through that journey, we leave and we come back frequently to this earth to learn lessons. And it's a never-ending process. When we leave this body, we're still alive, still experiencing. So life goes on.
Now that sounds a little bit different than the traditional Christian ideas about what happens when we die. What is your take on those beliefs?
Well, it is quite different. And if this was 400 or 500 years ago, it'd probably be branded anathema and tarred and feathered or
right,
burned at the stake. Because this idea does go against a lot of what the church teaches about the afterlife and what happens. The church has done a lot of good, giving people a framework to live their lives in, taught people how to live in peace, hopefully, and to learn how to love and to share and to serve each other. But I think it's really mistaken, missed the ball on the idea of what happens after we die. I don't believe that we die and we're judged by a vengeful God, as we're taught. I don't believe that when we die, if we've lived a bad life, that we immediately go to a place called hell and spend the rest of eternity there. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen like that. And I think as humanity's ability to think things through and science has become more prominent and proving the existence of unseen levels of matter and existence in the world, that people are starting to question this old idea of what happens after we die that the church has presented to us. So I think they've gotten it wrong, basically.
Well, as I understand it, the church's idea is that we have one life, and that when we die, that's pretty much the end. That we are a soul, the soul is eternal, but that's the end of it when we die. And you had the, well, first of all, before I go to that, I just want to say that it sounds like you're saying we come back again.
We do, repeatedly. Thousands of lifetimes have we had.
That's quite different than the church says. Yes. Yeah. You had the good fortune to interview Dr. Raymond Moody, who is the well-known author and researcher into near-death experiences.
I did.
That must have been fascinating. What is a near-death experience exactly?
A near-death experience is where someone is pronounced clinically dead, and within a few minutes or so, they come back to life. Their heart stops, brain functions stop, and they're pronounced dead, but then they end up coming back to life. And they are able to tell to those of people around them, their loved ones, doctors, of experiences they had when they were dead, out of the body.
Okay, so what are some of those typical experiences that you heard when you were interviewing Dr. Moody?
It's a wonderful subject. It's so fascinating, and he himself is a wonderful guy. Some of those characteristics of that experience are a person finds themselves in another body outside of this body. They might be floating above the body, say if they're in the hospital or something or in a bed, and they're looking down at themselves.
Okay.
They can see the people that are around their body below them. They can hear them talking. They see a tunnel. They start to go down that tunnel. At the end of that tunnel, they see a light, and they quickly, very quickly, come into that light. They come through the tunnel and enter into that light, and as they do, they see their friends and families, people that have died before them, who are waiting for them to greet them, and they're greeted by them. And this light takes on an individual loving presence about it. And the next thing that happens is this loving presence stands with that person, if you will, and a life review takes place where they see everything on one big screen that has happened to them, everything they've done or said that's affected them and affected other people. After that's over, they are told, or they're given the choice of either, you know, staying or going back to their body. Sometimes they're told that they need to go back to their body. Quite often people want to stay because they experience no pain if they've been having a lot of pain. They experience a newfound freedom from their body that they haven't experienced. But they make a choice to come back to the body, and then they find themselves back in the body, fully aware as they were before they were pronounced dead.
It's interesting that you said that one of the common experiences is that they review their life's experiences and the effects that their actions have had on others. Are they judged? Do they report feeling regret and remorse about things and criticized or judged about that?
Not at all. Not at all. That's the thing about it, is when they enter that light, it's just like you're swimming in a sea of love and compassion and understanding.
Okay.
And you yourself are really your own judge. As you look at those experiences that you've had in your life, you see the ramifications of things you've said. You see the ramifications of things you've done to people.
Good and bad.
Good and bad.
Okay.
And not only do you see the effect that it's had on that immediate person, but If you could take as an example, as you throw a rock into a pond and you see ripples rippling towards the shore, that's what happens. When you say something to someone, say it's a negative comment, that has effects beyond that person, and you see the effects that that has had on other people and other situations in your life. And the fascinating thing about this also is that quite often what we take to be have been our major accomplishments in life, we see aren't really that significant. And the smaller things that we've done or said to help somebody or speak a kind word to someone, those things stand out more prominently when we're doing that life review. But there's no sense of judgment. There's a sense of understanding about what we've been through, what we've done, where we've learned. Have we learned to love? That's the basic message. Have we learned to love? And that's what the review is about. How have we learned to love? Have we accomplished that purpose by being in existence?
People that are interested in reading about this can pick up books by Dr. Raymond Moody, right?
Yeah. His first book was called Life After Life, and he's written a number of books since then.
Okay. They could also pick up a book called Embraced by the Light, written by Betty Eady, E-A-D-I-E. And in there, she relates many similar experiences and also talks about the ripple effect and seeing, for example, that if she helped somebody, then they went home, they were in a good mood, and they were kind to somebody else, and that made that person feel good in this, in just kind of like a domino effect. Same thing with negative comments or negative reactions. And very descriptive and very, very interesting. That is said to be the most detailed, lengthy near-death experience ever recorded, is Betty Eady's book. And it is, it's a fascinating book, and I would encourage people to to check that out as well. But let me ask you, as you were talking to Dr. Moody, how common did he say these experiences were, these near-death experiences?
He said back in the 1980s, of course, he's interviewed thousands and thousands of people over the years that have had these experiences. But some scientists did a study, and based on the number of people that they had interviewed and projected that into the larger population, it was millions of people who they estimated had probably had that experience. I think something like 7 or 8 million. And as it's as that experience has become more talked about in our society, people aren't labeled weird or crazy when they talk to their family and friends about it, more people are speaking about these experiences as we've gone along.
I remember it took Betty Eady something like years and years for her family and friends to finally convince her to write a book, because she was afraid it would be a waste of time. Everyone would just laugh at her. And of course it wasn't. It was a bestseller for like 9 months, you know, and people weren't laughing at all. So you're right. People have a real keen interest in this. The people that, you said that commonly they're given a choice. You can come back or you can stay. Of course, he can only interview the people who chose to come back. When they come back, do they come back with any lessons that they've learned or anything like that that they can share?
They do, indeed. And some people, when they come back, they may not remember everything that happened during the experience. And certainly a lot of people are pronounced dead and come back and don't remember even any experience at all. But the lesson that people have is that love matters, that we're here for a purpose. I mean, people that have committed, tried to commit suicide, when they come back, there's almost no instance of them trying to repeat their suicide attempt after that, because they see that there's purpose to life and that love matters and that there is a reason that they're here. There, he tells a story of one minister, a fundamentalist minister, who died and had a near-death experience. And during that life review part of it, he saw himself at a pulpit preaching fire and brimstone, which he had done all his life. And suddenly he found himself, he saw this little boy in the congregation, which he had no relationship to, but he found himself in the awareness of that little boy. And he saw the fear and felt the fear that that little boy had because of what he was preaching to the congregation. And after he saw that, this presence that was with him, who he called Jesus, the presence said, not in a condemning way or a judging way, but it said, I don't guess you'll be preaching like that anymore, will you? And he, when he came back to life, to the body, he told people, he said, the most magnificent thing was, I've realized that God doesn't care about my theology. but that it was love, and how we care for one another, and how we demonstrate that in our lives day to day. That was the most important thing. People that have died tend to have a strong spiritual urge to know more and to study and to grow spiritually after they come back.
So they do come back with a little different point of view then, don't they?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And no fear of death. I know a friend of mine who, she's in her 70s now, and when she was in her 20s, she had a near-death experience. She was pronounced dead. She remembers floating above her body in the hospital, and the doctor saying, she's gone. And she was saying, I'm not gone, you know. Mm-hmm. But she said ever since, when she came back into the body, she has never had a fear of death since then. Because to these people that have had this experience, they know that life continues. They may or may not know that they come back or what happens further on after they're dead longer, but it gives them that strong sense that there is a continuity to existence.
I was going to ask you, do any of them report any kind of awareness that they've had previous lives or that they'll come back for any more lives?
Raymond Moody has said that it doesn't really prove or disprove it. The people that have commented on that felt like they weren't quite far enough along in the process to know whether it was true or not.
Okay.
But they do strongly believe there's a continuity of life, but whether or not they come back, the near-death experience itself is not, according to him, proof or not of that it's true.
Yeah. Now, I know that you're a longtime student of the Ageless Wisdom, and I am too, that included in the Ageless Wisdom philosophy or view of life and the universe is the idea of rebirth, the idea that when we die, that our spirit takes on different bodies and keeps coming back as we continue to learn the lessons that this planet Earth, our home, has to teach us, and that each time we pick up where we left off and continue to grow until we don't need bodies and don't have any more lessons to learn, which I have a hard time imagining myself. But that idea of rebirth, in the East they call it reincarnation, is not very popular among Christians. Mm-hmm. Why, do you have any idea why that is?
Well, early in the history of Christianity, reincarnation, rebirth, it's thought that it was really widely discussed and pondered upon by people of the faith, that it wasn't, you know, so far-fetched to people. In fact, there's instances which people point to in the New Testament of Jesus talking about the idea of reincarnation. But in the 6th century, the Emperor Justinian, who was the Roman emperor at the time, had the teachings of a theologian back then, his name was Origen, had his teachings branded anathema. And some think that it was because he was trying to consolidate the Roman Empire again and get people living together, and he couldn't have all these divergent types of philosophies going on, and he wanted to bring people around the flagpole of one religion and not have all these things that would make it harder to people to work and live together. Mm-hmm. And so the teachings of Origen were branded anathema, but it was funny that at that meeting when they did that, all these bishops that he had there, the Pope wasn't even there. These were all friends, or what you will, or bishops of the Emperor Justinian. So the teaching was expunged from the Christian faith starting back then, but people tended to believe it off and on. But I think why people have such a hard time with it today is because it goes against everything that we've been taught in terms of judgment, the purpose of Jesus dying on the cross, the vicarious atonement. I mean, what does it say about our sins being forgiven and us going to hell? If there's reincarnation, what does Jesus' death on the cross mean? And people don't want to deal with the ramifications of that because it brings into question so much of the Christian teaching. So people don't like the idea of that being wrong, what they've been taught. Mm-hmm. The church wants power over people, and if people have many lives to get it right and to become better people, then what do they need the church for? Mm-hmm. And also people don't like the idea of having to come back and going through the same sorrows, the same pains that they've had to go through in this life. They like the idea of, well, this is just one life, it's painful, but once I'm gone, I'm out of here, I'm through the pearly gates, and that's where I'm going to be for all time.
It is strange because there's one scene in the New Testament of the Christian Bible where the disciples ask Jesus straight up, they say, is John the Baptist Elias returned? And he says yes. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say, what a stupid question. Mm-hmm. Why would you even, he just says yes, a real simple answer. And you do get the feeling that it was probably understood at the time.
There's another saying in there too where they're asking Jesus about a blind man, and they say, why is this man blind? Did he sin or did his parents sin? Which many people, it was just common knowledge that people believed in reincarnation during that time.
He couldn't have possibly sinned to cause himself to be born blind unless it was in a previous lifetime.
Right. Yeah. And what a lot of people don't know is Jesus was a member or really close to the Essene community of that time. And the Essenes believed in the coming back of the soul to the body over time.
Where does that take us with the crucifixion, and what does all that mean? Do you have a short answer?
Well, it's all tied up with that idea of salvation. There's no way that, according to the ageless wisdom teachings, that all of the sins that we commit, ever how a person may define sin, that someone can take those sins away for us. We created our world that we each individually live in. We've created the sins that we've committed the sins that we have, and we have to pay for it ourselves. Jesus dying on the cross doesn't nullify the fact that we have to come back and make right all the wrongs that we've created.
Then what was it all about?
Jesus was a great teacher, a spiritual teacher, a son of God, but we're all sons and daughters of God. He died on the cross to show us the way back to God, in the sense that we all have to go through these different levels of awareness. We have to go through all these different steps of initiation to perfection, which he demonstrated on the physical plane. That dying on the cross was symbolic of the crucifixion initiation, where we totally renounce everything of this world for the good of the spirit to go on to God, basically. So salvation, we travel the path of salvation as we step onto the spiritual path. That path of salvation opens before us, but we can make it long or short. We all have free will, but it makes it harder in a way because we have to do the work now. We can't rest back on the fact that Jesus died 2,000 years ago. We have to do the work and make it better.
So he died to show us the way.
He died to show us the way.
To show us what we have to give up.
Yeah.
Which is our interest in everything
the world.
Earthly, including our physical bodies.
I mean, we think that we're all the things of this world.
It seems to me
not.
He also died to demonstrate that we come back, because he did come back. That we live after death, because he did come back.
He did come back.
Yes. Yeah. Which takes us back to rebirth. And I'm wondering, do you think that there will ever come a point where rebirth is proven, where we know that it's true?
I think it will. We're about to come into a time when some great spiritual teachers are going to be living out amongst humanity. According to the Ageless Wisdom teachings and British author Benjamin Krim, there's a great teacher in the world and has been for a number of years now. His name is Maitreya, and he's the world teacher. He's not a religious leader per se, but he's a great spiritual teacher who has come back to Earth, to humanity, to teach us who we are as children of God and to show us the way forward into the kingdom of God. But not only is he here, but a group of his disciples called the Masters of Wisdom. This group of spiritual teachers will be with us for a long time into the future. And very soon, within the next 100 years or maybe even less, humanity will be shown the fact of our divinity. It'll be demonstrated that we are on this long evolutionary journey back to God, and they will prove once and for all the fact of reincarnation. And once this happens, once people learn who they are, once Maitreya and these masters teach us about this, it's going to obliterate from our consciousness this fear of death that we all have.
if he's here now, why aren't we aware of it? And what is he here for?
We're not aware of it because he hasn't come out into the public arena yet. And he is, but that doesn't mean that he hasn't been working. From behind the scenes, he's been stimulating the process of change in the world. We've seen dramatic political, economic changes in the world and social changes happening over the last 20 years or so. Mm-hmm. We're waiting for a time when he's invited to come out before humanity by the world's media. One of the precursors of that happening is he has said that there'll be certain changes in the world, economic changes, mm-hmm. which will call forth his wisdom, that of the masters, to show us how to correct the problems that our current economic and political systems have created in the world. And once that happens, once this economic change comes about, Benjamin Krim has said a great economic collapse will happen, that this will send up a cry from humanity for help. And at that time, he will be invited to come on the world's television and radio and speak to humanity and basically advise us what we need to do to save ourselves.
Sounds like we're talking about the stock market.
In a way, we are, because the stock market is really probably symbolic of the economic climate in which we live. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people that aren't involved in the stock market that will experience this economic crash in a way that people that are involved in the stock market will experience it as well.
Now, he is coming as the world teacher, you said, to help humanity. It won't be the end of the world then?
It's not the end of the world at all. It's the beginning of a real golden age for humanity.
Okay.
It's a wonderful
time. And when he comes on TV, how will we know that it's him?
We will be alerted to it before the time when he comes out into the open.
Okay.
And there'll be a press conference, and there will also be what will come to be known as the Day of Declaration, when he will appear on television. But he won't speak. But yet he will talk to humanity for 20 or 30 minutes. But even though he won't speak, we will hear his thoughts in our minds. You and I will hear him in English. People in France will hear him in French. Whatever language people might be speaking
telepathy
around the world, that's the language they'll hear him in. It'll be telepathy in a way, because he will be overshadowing the minds of all humanity. And he will be telling us who he is, who we are, and why he's here. It'll be a wonderful day for humanity. And his energy, his love, will flow out through the hearts of all humanity. It will be as if he embraces all of humanity all at once. It'll be, in Christian history, there's the day of Pentecost, it talks about in the Bible. It'll
right.
be really a repeat, only this time on a worldwide scale, okay. of the happenings of Pentecost. On that day, hundreds of thousands of miracles, healings will take place, physical healings, as if the first thing about telepathically overshadowing humanity wouldn't be enough.
Right.
People will be healed of these ailments and diseases that they have had.
So if you're paying attention at all, it shouldn't be hard to miss.
It shouldn't be hard to miss if you're watching TV or the newspaper, and because we'll know that this person's in the world ahead of time, mm-hmm. and we will know ahead of time when this event's going
to
take
place.
And then
his teaching will begin, is that?
His teaching will begin. He will be with us for the next 2,000 years. He will not leave. And as we come back into incarnation over and over again over the next 2,000 years,
okay.
we will see him at the center of our planetary life, teaching, guiding, consoling, helping humanity. He and also his group, the Masters of Wisdom, will be here.
So rebirth shows up once again. As we come back, we will see him and his teachers here. And we will see a change in humanity, I guess, and in the world, huh?
A positive change, yeah. which we need.
Very exciting.
We need. Yep.
You know, it's really fascinating to hear an ordained minister's point of view, you know, who is also familiar with the angel's wisdom. I mean, you're a very unusual, you know, man. Your background is very unusual and very varied, and it's really wonderful to be able to talk to you about it. Thank
wonderful.
You very much, McNair.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate
Pleasure.
It. And thank you for being with us.
Visit us on Facebook at hashtag Planetary Makeover. This show has been a production of planetarymakeover.org. For more background information, visit www.shareinternational-west.org. For related books, DVDs, and CDs by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the world teacher Maitreya, please go to share-ecart.com.